You're listening to Bad Trip, the true crime and other weird shit podcast where two sisters take you on a wild ride through some of the world's most fucked up places. Each episode, we journey to a new location and explore its sordid past, creepiest urban legends, and landmarks you won't find in the guidebooks. So buckle up, because it's about to be a bad trip.
We interrupt this program because the civil authorities have issued a contagious disease warning.
911, where is your emergency?
The U.S. Navy has finally acknowledged that videos appearing to show UFOs flying through the air are real.
Initially, many thought the pops they heard were fireworks associated with the show, but soon it became obvious that this was an attack.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Bad Trip.
Hi there. I'm Taylor.
I'm Shauna.
And we're on episode 28 in Idaho.
Idaho.
Idapimp.
Oh, God. We made that joke last two times ago.
Yeah. And I think the time before that. Sorry, not sorry.
So, yeah, it's our third week in Idaho. This week, Taylor's going to tell you some weird laws and landmarks in the state.
Yeah, our creepy pit stops of sorts.
Yes, places that you can go check out or not.
Yeah, maybe not right now, but maybe, depending on what it is.
And then I am going to tell you a story. I think last week I might have said it was going to be a murder, but if I did say that, I lied. It's not a murder, but it's a crime.
I hope you didn't say it and you just admitted that you're a liar.
That's probably what happens.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh, before we get started, we want to talk about our stickers.
Sticker time.
Okay, so we got some beautiful stickers. They are vinyl 2x2, and you can stick them on your computer, like whatever. They're like safe to stick on and pull off, all that stuff.
Yeah, I put one on my like big water jug and I put it through the dishwasher and that shit held up.
Yes.
So if you want to get some, we have like a Dr. Goog, or wait, a form, right?
Yeah, a Google form. And we're sending them totally free. You don't have to pay anything.
And we'll send them internationally too. So if you live in another country, that's fine. The link is bit.ly/badtrip01. So just badtrip01 at the end.
Yep, bit.ly/badtrip01.
And, you know, just get some stickers. Give them to your friends. Give them to your pets. Don't do that.
And also thank you to everyone who's like been in touch lately. We've gotten some really nice notes from people and we appreciate every single one of you.
We're like, it's just so nice. It makes our day. We're both super busy and stressed and reading all that was like the nicest thing ever.
Yeah, it was very lovely.
And like friends popping up I haven't talked to in a while too. So that was cool.
Being like, give me your stickers.
And I'm like, I'll give you whatever you want.
All right. So with that, I'm going to give a quick little disclaimer and then we'll get into the stories and stuff. So this is a true crime podcast, but we're pretty lighthearted. We like to swear and just like talk shit and go on tangents. So we know that's not everyone's cup of tea. So if you're not into that, totally cool. But this is not the podcast for you. If you are into that, we love you.
We love you. And yeah, I say listen, give it a shot. If you don't think you like it, try. And if you hate it, just, you know, drink it off. Don't write us a bad review.
Yeah, just like write it off as a loss. Don't write us a bad review.
Amen. All right. And with that, let's get started with some law stuff.
Ooh, do I get to fill in the blank this time? Are they Mad Libs?
They're Mad Libs-ish, but I kind of like expanded on one a little more.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to start with a Mad Lib, though. Usually, blank is illegal. But if you find yourself in Idaho under extreme circumstances, feel free to take a bite out of a blank sandwich. Or it could be blank blank sandwich, depending on what you want to use.
Okay, so it's like blank is usually legal, but if you're in dire straits, you can take a bite out of a blank blank sandwich.
Yeah, and usually it's illegal, not legal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. I think that even though stealing is illegal, if, you know, if things are really bad, you can take a bite out of another person's sandwich.
Okay, wait, you're not too far off on the second blank blank.
Oh, okay.
All right, so the answer is usually cannibalism is illegal.
Oh.
But if you find yourself in Idaho under extreme circumstances, feel free to take a bite out of a long pig sandwich.
No.
Yeah, so you were like, you basically got it.
I basically did. You're stealing someone's flesh.
That's accurate. I mean, unless they give it to you.
That's true.
Yeah. So this law sparked my interest, not in cannibalism, just in learning more about why this is a thing. And it was on the official website of the Idaho legislature. So I was like, oh, this is like legit. I'm about to find out more.
Yeah, because I feel like sometimes these laws, they're like, I mean, it's probably like a law in one little town and whatever, but this is like serious business here.
Right? So I was like, ooh, let me do some legit research for this part and tell you some things. Okay, so I don't know many law things, like shocking. Do you know I don't know much law?
When you call them law things?
Yeah. I don't know a ton of law things. But I'm going to say some law things and they're going to sound familiar, so you'll be fine. The following statutes are found under Title 18, Crimes and Punishments, Chapter 50, Mayhem.
Oh, mayhem. Okay.
18-5001, Mayhem defined. Every person who unlawfully and maliciously deprives a human being of a member of his body or disables, disfigures, or renders it useless or cuts out or disables the tongue, puts out an eye, slits the nose, ear, or lip, is guilty of mayhem.
That seems a little like mayhem isn't a strong enough word.
I'm saying like slit my nose.
If you cut out my tongue, that's mayhem.
Mayhem. It's mayhem in here.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So yikes. Next, 18-5002, punishment for mayhem. Mayhem is punishable by imprisonment in the state prison not exceeding 14 years.
Oh, so I could go and cut your tongue out, stab your eyeballs out, and slit your nose, and break both your arms, and I would go to jail for 14 years?
And you'd still get less jail time than some black men that are in jail for marijuana charges.
Yeah, yeah. People of all genders and races, disproportionately black men.
Yes. So yeah, 14 years, that's freaking wild.
Wow. I wonder like how that differs from assault or like how, you know, is that not attempted murder? They probably just stack all the charges.
Yeah, I bet it's just another reason to throw another thing on there.
Yeah.
18-5003, cannibalism defined, punishment. 1. Any person who willfully ingests the flesh or blood of a human being is guilty of cannibalism. 2. It shall be an affirmative defense to a violation of provisions of this section that the action was taken under extreme life-threatening conditions as the only apparent means of survival.
Okay, so like Donner Party situation.
Yes, I believe. So like, what's that book, Hatchet, where they get like stranded on the plane and the boy kills his like soccer team or eats his soccer team or something?
I don't think that's what happens. I think everyone dies except him.
Yeah, right, because doesn't he eat them all? That's what I'm saying. He has to eat them to survive because they die and stuff.
Okay, but he did not kill them and eat them.
I know. Then I corrected myself and was like, well, he eats them.
I don't remember him eating them, but I believe you.
I don't think I ever read it. This is just what I've heard.
Well, I read it in fifth grade and I didn't remember him eating any people.
Okay, so new plot, Hatchet 2. The hatchet returns. The hatchet strikes back.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh. Okay, well, guys, let us know if you've read Hatchet. Does he eat his soccer team?
And in Hatchet 2, The Hatchet Strikes Back, would you prefer the hatchet to eat people or the hatchet to eat other hatchets?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
And now, like, he's the hatchet sidekick.
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know. Okay. Anyways, back to cannibalism. Finally, number 3, since it's mayhem, you can only get a maximum sentence of 14 years, like I said. So, yeah, assuming you didn't murder the person, assuming they didn't die.
You just like took a chunk out of their arm and just started eating it.
Oh, okay. The weird law article from USA Today that actually led me to the government site, so this is where I saw it first, had an insane picture for this law. So if you look at my photos, I just need you to bask in the glory of this photo that USA Today chose.
Oh my, that's just someone's arm. Like not a disembodied arm. It's attached to a body. You just can't see the body. And it's between two really long breads. Breads. Like, it's like in a baguette, like in a sandwich.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a sub, basically.
Yeah. It's like a, you know, a $5 2-foot long.
Yeah. It's like a pub sub, but long pig style.
I don't know what a pub sub is, but sure.
It's like a public sub. People are like obsessed with them because you can like make your own. It's like Subway times 1,000.
Oh, okay. And there's lettuce. Yum.
Yum. So I'll give you one more lighthearted-ish law just because it sucks to think about eating someone. Hopefully you think that.
No, I think I love thinking about it.
Mm, yum. Any person who disposes of blank by means of openly placing, throwing, releasing, discharging, or depositing from a blank is guilty of a misdemeanor.
Okay, I think if you're disposing of human waste.
Okay.
And you're disposing of it from a moving vehicle.
Ooh, girl. All right. Any person who disposes of human body waste.
What?
Amazing. By means of openly placing, throwing, releasing, discharging, or depositing from a passenger train is guilty of a misdemeanor.
Oh my God, I basically got that right.
You did. You're like weirdly good at these.
I'm
but
psychic.
You thrive on Mad Libs.
But also our brains are like connected, so I think I can just read your mind a little bit.
That's true, and you know which laws I'll pick, because like, duh.
That's true, I could pick some themes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the second law. I guess if you're not on a passenger plane.
Train.
Or a train. Don't throw it off a plane either. But if you're not on a passenger train, you can throw it off. If you're on like a freight train, go ahead.
I guess
shit in your
fine.
Hand
yeah.
and fling it off like a monkey or whatever.
Are you on a bicycle? Who cares?
I didn't look up the bike rules.
Oh, okay. Don't get ahead of yourself.
Yeah, don't get crazy, Lance Armstrong. Neil?
Lance.
Lance.
Neil went to the moon in 1969.
Not 1968. The year after. Even Stevens. Okay, so that's it for laws.
I loved those.
All right. Pit stop number one. We're going to start this week's pit stops in Island Park, Idaho, which sits on the far northeast of Idaho, right before that little panhandle part.
Okay. It's like in the top right of the square.
Yep. Yeah. Here you'll find Yellowstone's Zone of Death.
Oh.
Do you know what this is?
No, I know what Yellowstone is, but...
Okay, good. All right, here we go. So there's a 50 square mile stretch of Yellowstone National Park that spills over Idaho's border and is a legal no man's land.
Wait, this sounds a little familiar.
Yay. Okay. Okay. So it's just like so crazy exciting to me. It's an isolated spot without roads or any permanent human inhabitants. And that means it's also missing legislation to allow people to be charged with serious crimes.
Is it missing legislation? Like, can I move there? Can I just like go and like move in?
I'm not sure, because I'm like, why hasn't anyone done that? So you probably can't buy land from them because it's part of a national park.
No, I'm not buying land. I'm just building a house and there's no laws to tell me not to.
Well, I think there's laws that you can't build on national parks.
But isn't there laws you can't kill on national parks?
I'll explain.
Okay.
Oh, first I want you to look at a photo so you can kind of see like where this is at. If you want to look at our photos, you can check out our website, badtrippod.com, and look at our episode guide, or go on our Instagram at badtrippod.
And both of those should be linked in the show notes of this episode.
Okay, so you can see in that picture, like from above, the little red line.
Oh my God, it's like mostly in Wyoming, but you were like, hey, it's in Idaho too.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's just a little leak over from Wyoming. So that's the only part that's in Idaho of the park.
Wow. Oh, Taylor also included a picture of some animals. It's a wolf and some bears because they are the only residents in Yellowstone National Park's Zone of Death.
Yeah, and you can't be roommates with them, so you can't live there.
They're so cute. Are these the ones you were watching earlier?
No, oh my God. I don't just sit there and watch bears and wolves alone. I watch it with my dog.
Yeah, it's not weird, you guys.
It's not weird. We watch it together. Sometimes we watch birds. Depends on the day.
Lately, pandas have been like really great to
Damn.
Watch. Watch this guy eat bamboo, man.
Pandas are cool, you guys. Look up pandas. Look up the Wolong like zoo in China.
Nature Center.
It's in China. It's on YouTube. Look up panda live stream. You'll see it.
Yeah, you won't regret it. I also learned that like pandas in the wild are carnivores and like they can totally attack and kill people. But pandas in captivity are like little sweethearts.
Yeah, so basically they'll rip you to shreds. So don't approach them.
Don't fuck with pandas.
Don't fuck with them because we'll fuck with you for the rest of your lives.
Anyway.
Okay. Anyways. All right, so I'm basically going to read the rest straight off of Atlas Obscura because it's law stuff. And like I said, I don't know the law stuff. So I don't want to do it in my own words.
Okay.
And if you want to see the link to this amazing article, look at our episode guide. All right. The loophole has to do with the Sixth Amendment, which dictates that a jury must be comprised of people from the state and federal district where the crime was committed. So because this portion of Yellowstone is in Idaho and the park itself lies within the jurisdiction of Wyoming, a jury for a crime committed there would have to come from people who both live in Idaho and fall under Wyoming's federal jurisdiction.
So it really seems like you can do anything there.
Yeah, I mean, kinda.
So why not move there?
I don't know, but I don't think you can move into a national park. Like, I think that's not allowed. So you
but
can't.
Who's going to try you for it? Who's your jury?
Maybe they'll stab you and slit your throat.
Yeah, they'll probably shoot you or something.
Because they don't. Maybe that's what happens because you can murder there. So maybe everyone that tries to move in.
Even the government can murder. Well, the government can murder anywhere.
I was like, the government does murder anywhere. Yeah, they just have been murdering people.
Okay.
Throwing them in a geyser.
Loophole closed.
Yep, we closed it. So, yeah, this means it's impossible for a jury to form. And since Yellowstone is federal land, the individual states involved have no legal jurisdiction to amend the issue. So there was this Michigan State University law professor named Brian Kalt, K-A-L-T, Kalt? Don't know. I didn't want you to think it was like cult.
Like he's in a cult.
Yeah. Brought the loophole into the spotlight in 2005. He published a paper called The Perfect Crime and sent copies of his work to various government authorities before it hit print, hoping that someone would close the loophole.
Yeah, he's like, look, I'm not trying to give murderers an idea, but this should probably be raised
right
to attention.
Please do this, and if you don't, I'm going to make some money off of it. Well, they didn't. No one cared.
Mm.
Shock. So, yeah, no action has been taken, even though news of this crazy loophole made national headlines. Nothing happened.
Has anyone ever been murdered there?
Nope.
Okay, well, let's test it.
So, yeah, let's test it. Who wants to meet us? Just kidding, I have some ideas. Just kidding. Oh my God. Oh my gosh, my next sentence was somehow no one we know of has been murdered there, except we just closed the loophole, so they have.
Yeah. Yeah. Allegedly. According to us only.
Allegedly, according to us, allegedly. Apparently the zone of death inspired a 2008 novel called Free Fire and a 2016 horror film called Population Zero. I haven't heard of either, but I kind of want to watch the movie.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
So let's maybe look that up.
We still never watched that movie from a while ago, by the way.
Oh, Jonah Hill and James Franco.
Yeah.
Okay, let's watch that too.
Okay, soon.
Yeah, movie night. All right, ready for pit stop number two?
Ready.
We're making our way from the zone of death to Boise. See, I said it right.
Oh, you did. Oh, boy.
Boise. Oh, here we will find the old Idaho Penitentiary. In 1870, when Idaho was still a territory, the penitentiary was built as a single-cell building. Throughout the years, though, inmates were put to work quarrying nearby stone, then designing and constructing new buildings to expand the size.
You have to build your own fucking prison.
Yeah. What?
That's so cruel.
It's so fucked. Eventually, what started as the single-cell building turned into 15 buildings housing over 600 inmates.
Wow.
Ugh. In 1973, after two serious riots over living conditions, the prisoners were relocated and the prison was closed. And since then, the penitentiary has been added to the National Register of Historic Places.
The fact that, like, they, I don't know, they're like, okay, we'll just move these people instead of just, like, fixing this place. I mean, I don't know, I guess it was really old, but, like, I'm just like, they try so hard to avoid doing anything.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you literally made prisoners build their own cells, prison cells.
Yeah. It's fooked.
It's fooked. Ugh.
Unless they're like, if it was entirely like pedophiles and like serial rapists and stuff, I'd be like, that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. You can do that if you're like a psycho murdering like Richard Ramirez, Joseph DeAngelo type.
Yeah. They can build whatever we want to make them build.
Yeah. Build everything. Oh, yeah. And finally, the Idaho State Historical Society built a museum and tours are offered. So if you want to see it, get your vaccine and go get your jail on.
Yeah. I don't know if we've talked about this, but we live in Georgia and Georgia is like the last state in terms of vaccine distribution. Like we're failing the most.
I didn't know that.
So it's going to be a while until we can go anywhere, probably.
Yay. I don't mind waiting. It's already been a year.
I know. Literally a year. But you know what? If it weren't for COVID, we wouldn't have probably started the podcast, honestly.
That's accurate.
So one good... Oh God, I can't even say that.
One good thing. And I met Christopher.
That's true.
Two good things. Okay, now check out the photos because you'll see kind of like what it started as and then what it turned into.
So that's what it was in the beginning?
Yes.
It looks like a little Western...
like shop.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
It's a saloon.
Ooh, what's this?
Ooh, okay, so those are the cells inside one of the buildings, the new cells. And then those are some confiscated weapons.
Screwdrivers, knives.
Shivs, shovels. Shaunas, just kidding.
Jeez. Wow, that's intense.
Right? Yeah, so that's number two.
I love it. I mean, I don't love it. It sucks.
I love that one.
No, I take it back. I just like there was like a silence and I felt like I had to say something. I don't love it. I just think history is interesting.
It is. It is. All right. So you can stop being awkward. We're going to move on to stop number three.
Are there potatoes?
If you bring your own.
Okay.
You might run into one or two, but I don't really know how they grow out there. So our final pit stop is at a secluded site of a 1943 plane crash in McCall, Idaho. The B-23 Dragon bomber wreckage located on the kind of centralish western edge of Idaho.
Oh, and it's just still there?
Yeah. So in January of 1943, 8 military men were on a training mission with the goal to land safely in Tacoma, Washington. A massive snowstorm surprised them, causing a slew of heavy ice that began to completely break down the plane mid-flight.
Yeah, because planes were like brand new back then, practically still.
It was like two sticks with cardboard on the end that someone was flapping really hard.
It's exactly what it was.
Exactly. That was like the first plane ever. Fit 8 people in there. The radio stopped working, leaving the men cut off from all outside communication. They either had the choice to parachute into the snowy wilderness or attempt to land. So somehow this badass pilot spotted Loon Lake through the ice-coated windshield and decided he'd take the chance to use its frozen surface as a makeshift landing strip.
And just hoping that it was frozen enough.
And trying to see out of something that was like basically cracked ice, so you can't even see it exactly. Ooh. And it's all white, like it's all snow and ice, so you don't even know when you're about to hit it exactly, like, mm-mm.
No, thank you.
Yeah. After two attempts to land, so I guess he like had to turn around and try again. I mean, I don't know how else that would happen. Or he tried to land and it was long enough that he could like get back up in the air and try to land again, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how planes work, so.
I don't either. I just like didn't want to speculate one way because then I just realized there could be other ways. So yeah, attempted to land two times. The bomber finally hit the ice, sliding through the forest and stopping about 150 feet from the lake shore. And it was wingless because the trees tore them off. So then it was just like a bullet flying through the forest, ripping through trees.
Were they still alive?
All of them. Yep. All 8 men survived.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah. I didn't want to make this too long. So like if you're interested in this, you can look up the stuff that they went through. But they were in the woods and weren't rescued for about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's very hatchet of them.
It's super hatchet. So everything that remains of the mangled plane is still at the original crash site. You have to trek through the woods on a 10-mile round-trip hike that blends multiple intersecting trails. So you're basically going on like a wild journey through the woods to a miracle plane crash.
How many miles did you say?
10 round trip. Okay. Yeah.
So that's a decent hike, especially if you're like probably going to get lost if you're me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me too. And I'm like, what trails? Like, ooh. Also, I liked it because it doesn't seem creepy, disrespectful, like you're gawking at like a death site because everyone survived. So it's cool as shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at the photos. I'm so excited. You guys have to look at these photos. If you don't have Instagram, it's fine. Go to our website. If you don't want to go to our website, go on Instagram.
So many choices. Okay. So first there's a picture of the plane, I guess, intact.
Yeah.
What's this? I don't understand.
Oh, these are just the men. Oh,
okay.
Some of the men, not all of them.
I was like, are they in front of a dead body? Like, what's happening? Oh, dead Bigfoot?
I actually don't really know what that is. Maybe they slayed a lion. I don't know. I'm just kidding. It's not funny. I really like, guys, I can't stand people that kill animals. No. I hate everyone.
This is like an old photo, so we can't like see what the hell is going on in it.
And it's black and white, so it's like the contrast is horrid.
Okay, now I'm looking at photos of the wreckage, and holy shit, this is wild. I cannot believe they survived this.
I know.
So like parts of the wing are still attached.
It looks like a full, almost full plane from above.
Well, it's missing like a lot of the wings though.
I don't know how big wings are.
It's missing most of them.
Okay. It's missing most of the wings, you guys.
wow, it's just, I mean, mangled is the right word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot. It's just so fucking crazy that everyone lived. Eight people lived. And I mean, the pilot, just like, good job.
Yeah, damn.
Jeez, Captain Sully who? I'm just kidding.
Wow, so was that your last pit stop?
That was it.
All right, that was a wild journey. Thank you for that.
You're so welcome. I'm ready to hear about yours.
All right, let's take a quick little break and then we'll come back and talk about some pot smoking hippies.
Oh, are we talking about ourselves?
Oh my God, oh nerd. My God.
Okay, break time.
And we're back.
Hi there again.
So,
tell me your Idaho story.
Thank you for that lead in. I was struggling. I forgot how to say words.
I saw her fully malfunctioning.
All right. So before I get into this, I would like to say that I got the majority of this information from a book called The Great Potato Bust by Grant Humphreys, which was published in 2019.
She read a whole ass novel, y'all.
I did. And it's a memoir of sorts, and it has literally nothing to do with potatoes, which was a surprise to me because I literally thought I was reading a story about a completely unrelated case and a completely different case that happened in the 70s. This happens in the 60s.
Oh, no.
And about halfway through the book, I was like, I don't think this is the same thing.
You're like, when do the potatoes come in?
Exactly. But the book does make mention of one of the guys in the other story. So it was really weird.
Whoa.
Because he's like a famous potato guy.
Oh, OK. I was like, he is the link to these crimes.
No. So anyway, I was mistaken. So I'm just going to do the story instead because I was already halfway through a book and I was like, I'm not starting over.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. Also, we have decided that we are making potatoes after this.
Yeah, they're going to be like smashed potatoes and they're going to be delicious.
Oh, yum. OK.
All right. So keep in mind when I'm telling you the story that it comes mainly from one person's point of view. And it's very clear he has some strong opinions.
You have some strong opinions.
Accurate. And he seems to think pretty highly of himself, and he's short and apparently has kind of like a Napoleon complex. It's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's like a little bit misogynistic, probably a little racist, like, you know, just all the things that were like, okay, not okay to be in the 60s, obviously, but like accepted a lot more among white people than they are even today, which they still are. So, you know what? It's even pointless to say.
Yeah. So basically everything's the same and everything sucks.
Yeah. So
he's just a little sprinkle of all the different kinds of white men in the world.
Yes.
Compacted into a small cube of a person.
Accurate. He also got some facts wrong, like basic facts, like dates and stuff. And I was able to find newspaper articles and correct the dates. So, you know, just take this with a grain of salt. I don't know. It's the basic story is definitely true and backed up by newspapers from that time. But the details are just a little iffy. So just go with it.
That's embarrassing, allegedly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we can assume that memoirs all are like a little bit embellished.
No, the dates thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's 2019, like we all have Google.
Oh, yes, I agree.
I'm like, do your basic lookups and then I'll think you're credible. So if you're listening to this, I respect you as an author. Good job. I have never written a book, but fucking look some dates up, yo.
Yeah, if I could find it on newspapers.com, so can you.
Yeah.
So first, I'm going to read you an excerpt from the introduction. It will just set this story up for us.
All right.
Dear members of the Twin Falls Police Department, howdy hi, Spud Pickers. How's y'all been doing? It's hard for me to believe, but it's been over 50 years since Harry and I were illegally detained in your infamous Crowbar Motel. Over 50 years now, and I still can't prevent myself from laughing when I think back on officers Ed Heath and Mike McGreer's pathetic attempts to rid the Magic Valley of hippie scum like Harry and me.
Wow, that hippie scum.
Yeah.
This wouldn't have happened if it weren't you meddling hippie scum.
Exactly.
Then he like pulls the flower crown off their heads.
Oh my God. And
a ghost pops out and goes, boo.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. So let's get into the story.
Yeah, we should do that. Take this mic away from me.
Gladly. All right. So the year was 1967. Grant Humphreys Jr., the author of the book, was a student at University of Southern Idaho. He lived with his grandparents in Jerome, Idaho, which is near the city of Twin Falls. And it's a very Mormon area of the state. It's by Utah.
Oh, okay. Was he Mormon?
He grew up in like a Mormon family, but he was not Mormon.
Okay.
He had like recently had a breakthrough and like moving away from the church and whatever. And I don't think he was ever super religious to begin with, but
gotcha. Okay.
Now he's like anti-Mormon.
Ooh.
So here I just have a picture of the Shoshone Falls, which is near Twin Falls. You can just see how beautiful the area is.
That's so pretty. That's like 76 falls. I don't know what Twin Falls.
Yeah, I think so. The Twin Falls were actually different waterfalls and they like built a dam, I think. I don't know.
Daniel. Yeah, that's really pretty. I mean, it's like, I just love waterfalls.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
How hard do you think that's pounding down?
I mean, enough to probably fucking kill you. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. I feel like it'd break your neck in a second. It would like compact my vertebrae.
But I mean, haven't people like survived going off a barrel or going off Niagara Falls in a barrel? So
they have. Maybe. Guys, if you want to try that out, live stream it.
Don't, you know, a joke. It's all a joke.
Don't a joke.
We are not advising you to do anything.
It's all a joke.
Okay. So Grant was a bit of a hippie. Having grown up in the Mormon church, like I said, he had never smoked weed before, but he really wanted to.
He was itching for the devil's lettuce.
He was itching hard. So are you familiar with the book On the Road by Jack Kerouac?
I am not.
Okay, so
I believe I've seen the cover. I don't know anything about it.
I started to read it and never finished it because I didn't like it. So it's a book from the 50s by, like, you know, kind of like the beatniks. And there was like Allen Ginsberg and it was kind of like pre-hippies. There was this like subculture of white people being poets and like thinking they were deep.
Okay, yes, yeah. I do know the vibe.
Jack Kerouac was part of that scene, and this book was a fictional story about a young man who like traveled the country in his car, smoked a lot of weed, fucked a lot of women. I don't know, it was like supposed to be transformative, but it was just kind of like a, you know, circle jerk.
Interesting.
So Grant read that book. He loved it.
It was his Bible.
Yeah, it was his biblioteca. No.
Donde está la biblioteca?
God, that was, I'm so sorry. It's a Spanish.
Well, mine was a movie quote, so you're the only offensive one. I'm kidding.
Man.
Movie quotes can be offensive.
Very true. They can be.
Sorry, I didn't say it first. It's not offensive.
Okay, so anyway, back to this pot-smoking hippie. Not yet pot-smoking hippie.
Pre-pot-smoking hippie.
The next thing I wrote in my notes was a big header that says Kerouac, more like Kerouac.
Oh, my Lanta.
Yeah. So he's on a mission to get stoned for the very first time.
Okay.
So Grant drove to California to buy a pound of weed from a friend.
Hi.
Yeah. He stored it in a rusted out part of the car, covered it in duct tape, and then spray painted that part of the car yellow, which is his car color, and then like splashed it with mud so it would be undetectable.
Wait, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty smart.
Okay, I'm using this.
Well, yeah, since you do have like holes in your car.
Oh my God, there's so many just like drill bits. And I mean, there's no drill bits in the car.
Jeez.
Just big screws and stuff.
So yeah, that's how Grant became a drug dealer in the small town of Jerome, Idaho.
He started with that 1 pound?
Yeah.
Wow, Grant, you're an entrepreneur.
It actually might have been 2 pounds now that I'm thinking of it, but either way.
Either way, flip or flop.
So he sold the pot to friends. Do you want to guess how much it was per ounce?
Oh, okay. Like, was it crazy expensive compared to now?
No, it was the 60s.
Money was different then, though. So who knows? You know, who really knows? Not me. I'm going to say it was $47.
$15 an ounce.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It was also like basically not marijuana, though.
Yeah, it was like dirt weed.
Yeah.
And the way they measured an ounce, like they could weigh it, obviously, but the way they like quick hand measured it was they would put weed in a plastic baggie, like a sandwich baggie, 4 fingers high.
Wow.
And that would be about an ounce.
I mean, all right, give or take. I guess you probably get a little more sometime, a little less another time.
Yeah.
YOLO.
So when they started running low, they needed to figure out a way to buy more without driving all the way to San Francisco again. Oh, and by they, I mean, he went back and like, he and his friends were hanging out and smoking pot all the time.
Okay, his little crew.
Yeah. So they decided to stage a love-in in Jerome.
A love-in?
A love-in.
McLovin.
Exactly like that. No, so according to Wikipedia, a love-in is a peaceful public gathering focused on meditation, love, music, sex, and or psychedelic drugs.
Ooh, okay, so it's like Coachella.
Yeah, it's a lot like Coachella.
Love it. OG Coachella.
So it sometimes they served as a form of protest. Sometimes they were protesting against a specific thing. Sometimes it was just like, fuck the man.
I would go.
Yeah, it sounds fun. I mean, it's like Hempfest in Boston. That was really fun.
Ooh, that is fun.
The first love-in ever happened in L.A. in 1967, so the same year as this story. So it was a very new concept.
Ooh, they caught on fast.
So just to be clear where we're at this story, these dudes are so horny for weed that they organize an entire event complete with live music in the hopes that someone would show up to peddle pot at the event.
What?
Yes.
Okay, I would rather just drive to California. It's not that far.
I agree.
Oh, whatever, though. They were like, let's get something out of this, too.
Yeah, I guess so. So Grant promoted it to the local news, and the story quickly blew up, not just in Idaho, but across the U.S.
Whoa.
It was wild. People were outraged that such a hedonistic event was taking place in little old Idaho in the Mormon area.
Oh, they were mad?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Those freaking hippie heathens.
Yeah, because, you know, it was like very counterculture. This Grant and his friends, like most of them had long hair, and they were just like, people would yell at them in the streets because of it. It was like very, you know, just dislike for anyone who was different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like just those towns that are like, oh, don't you dare wear a Metallica shirt or you're a devil worshiper.
Exactly. Yeah, it was like the 60s version of that.
Jeez.
In August of 1967, the day finally arrived. Starting at 10 a.m., people gathered in Jerome City Park to experience the lovin'. It sounds so silly. Some lovin', just experiencing some lovin'.
I love that. I lovin' that.
According to the media, spectators who were just curious to see the event far outnumbered the hippies who were there. They just wanted to observe this counterculture, I guess.
Oh my gosh.
And the media said there were about 1,500 attendees in total throughout the day.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, decent size.
I'd say.
In a town of like 7,000 or something like that. Well, it's like 7,000 or 8,000 today, so probably a lot less back then.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow.
According to Grant, however, there were literally, he said there were like 33,000 people there and that they were at least 50% hippies. So
that's what he like said after the thing.
In his book, that's what he said.
Wow. Grant, honey.
I know. I'm like, you tried. Like, 1,300 is not bad. Like, take it. Or 1,500, whatever.
Yeah, that's a good amount. I'm like, 33,000 is a lot.
Yeah.
Too many.
Yeah, it's wild. Oh, I was also laughing because he was like, there were multiple traffic jams that day. The first and last time a traffic jam has ever occurred in Jerome. Like, okay, bro.
Like, sure. But I bet there's a lot of old people there and there are traffic jams all the time.
I bet. So here I have a picture. It's like, not the best quality, but this is a picture from the newspaper of the love-in.
Okay, so it's just like, you know, a lot of people around. They're like in the street. There's a band playing on stage. Everyone's like enjoying the, you know, just the atmosphere.
The festivities, yeah. So they had like people selling art. You know, the stores around were getting a lot of business because people were in town for this thing. So it was kind of cool. And you can see in the picture, there's like some hippies like standing, dancing, doing whatever. There's a band on stage, not playing yet, but like getting ready to play. And then there's like people kind of sitting and observing. So like back here, you can see in the back left, there's like this blonde girl. I think she's like probably a high schooler. She looks like she's like a, I don't know, the opposite of a hippie. So I think she's just observing maybe.
So, wow, that's interesting. You really have like a little screen grab of everybody.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So it probably won't surprise you that the local cops were not a fan of Grant and his friends at this point. But of course, they were counterculture and they loved standing out and being like, fuck the man.
Absolutely. They would fit in today.
Yeah. So to paint an even bigger target on themselves, they spray painted Grant's entire car and covered in slogans like Make Love Not War and LSD, baby.
Oh my gosh.
So edgy.
I love it. You rebels.
Can we spray paint our cars with LSD, baby?
Yeah, as long as I can write Make Love Not War on mine as well.
Yes, of course.
Thank you. And I want to write Hippie Heathen on my driver's side door with an arrow up to my window.
Okay, I love that though.
Thank you.
Can we get that on stickers?
Yes, absolutely we can. That is our next sticker.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Yes.
So anyway, the lovin' went off without a hitch. It was peaceful despite a verbal altercation and threats from some local men who just hated the hippies.
Just hated happiness and everything.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who went were just genuinely curious. Like they had this image of hippies in their mind. They were like violent, pot smoking, like,
yeah,
you know, aggressive, whatever, like radical. And a lot of them were just like stoned dorks.
They're like, we're just trying to hang out and just sit in the grass here and leave us alone.
Yeah. Like most of them weren't that revolutionary. They weren't like fighting for anything. They were just like smoking weed.
Yeah.
Grant and his friends did end up finding their weed that day.
Oh my God, I forgot that was the whole point. Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay.
So they met a guy named Stan who ran a marijuana delivery service out of Boise.
Stan the man.
So now they had a supplier,
mm-hmm.
and they started a full-scale drug dealing operation, and they were doing pretty well for themselves.
Okay.
Then one day, Grant called Stan to set up a delivery. But Stan's car was in the shop, so he told Grant he'd have to drive to Boise to pick it up.
Oh, okay. Did I make up that you said it was a bicycle delivery service?
No, it was not a bicycle. Boise is like 2 hours away, so he would like drive into Jerome to drop off the weed.
I feel like when you said delivery, I thought of high maintenance, and he's a bicycle guy, so
yeah. It was not.
Watch High Maintenance if you haven't seen it. It's so fucking good.
It's on HBO.
I want to watch it right now. I'm going to watch it on my phone. Don't tell Shauna.
We could watch it while we eat our potatoes.
Ooh, yep.
So anyway, Grant has to drive to Boise, but he's really worried that his car is going to attract unwanted attention.
Why? It's like, doesn't have sayings on it, like make love, not war.
Right?
Mm.
It basically says a cab.
It does.
What happened was he offered his friend half an ounce to drive him there. And I'm not really telling you a lot of names here because there's just too many people involved and it would get confusing.
Okay.
And they're like not that relevant.
And if you want to learn, just like read this book.
Yeah, I don't recommend it, but
take it with a grain of salt.
So they ended up also bringing two other guys along with them, and they planned to stay in Boise for the night. So they got a motel room, and one of the guys they brought with was the driver's little brother whose girlfriend lived there. So he was crashing with his girlfriend.
Okay.
They dropped off the little brother and then they met up with Stan, but he was acting weird.
He was wired.
So first of all, he pulled up in the car that was supposedly in the shop. And when they questioned him about it, he was like, oh, it turns out it was just like a spark plug, whatever. And they fixed it.
Okay. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, it's a little odd, but, you know, not out of the realm of possibility.
But also, I'd be like, I drive this shit to you all the time. Like, you can come here once.
Yeah. But he had a business card that he gave them that literally said, like, mobile delivery or some shit, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's one thing.
After that, things got weirder when he explicitly asked where in the car they were planning on hiding the weed on the drive back home.
Stan.
Right. And the other guys, so apparently, according to Grant, he was like on to him, but the other guys were just so dumb, they didn't understand what was happening.
Like, I bet you were all dumb. I mean, you're all probably stoned. Not that stoners are dumb, just like it makes you, you know, a little meh at the time.
Yeah, not the most sharp, I guess you could say.
Yeah, like you're not an idiot. You're just not going to catch on to something real quick.
Or you're going to be really paranoid and assume everyone's trying to like fuck with you.
Oh my God, that's so true.
So Grant was suspicious, but he played it cool. They just like hung out. They got the weed, and then after a little while, Stan peaced out, and he was going to like come hang out again later, I guess, he said.
Interesting. He's like, why don't you tell me exactly where you'll be in 47 minutes?
Exactly. Can I actually just put this tracking device on you? So once he left, Grant was like, yo, you guys, this is shady as fuck. Like, we have to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And the friend was like, I don't want to drive all the way back, man. Like, you're being paranoid. And so Grant was like, all right, I'm going to go hitchhike. And he like started walking, and the friend was like, okay, fine, I'll fucking take you. So just the two of them got in the car, drove the 2 hours back to Jerome, stashed the weed, and then drove back to Boise to finish out the night and pick up the little brother the next morning.
Whoa, wait, really?
Yeah.
So they drove it 2 hours, dropped it off, and returned?
Yeah.
To get everyone else? Bonks.
Because they hadn't spent the night yet, so it was like still the first day there.
Well, right. I was just waiting for them to get in trouble, though, and now it's somewhere else.
Yeah. So they had to go stash it so they wouldn't get in trouble.
Wow. Okay, this is going not how I thought.
So when they got back, the guy who had stayed behind said that Stan had come by the motel room and was like asking even more questions. And like the guy lied and was like, they went to a movie. They'll be back in a few hours.
Okay, good. Glad he lied.
Yeah. So as far as Stan knew, things were going as planned.
Okay.
They ended up hanging out with him. They like went to a restaurant and ran inside to grab some food. And he was like, oh, I'm just going to sit in the car. I'm just going to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever. They came back. Life was good.
Life was good.
The next day, Grant claims that on their way to pick up the driver's brother from his girlfriend's place, they found 6 hits of acid in the glove compartment.
What?
Yeah. So they believed Stan placed it there when they went into the restaurant to get their food.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. So they were like, well, shit, like, we'll take this acid.
I was going to say, you guys want to do acid?
So they dropped acid, got rid of the vial. They like threw it out the window.
Wow.
Litter bugs.
Yeah. Don't litter. At least like if you're going to do acid, don't be a dick.
Yeah. Hit me.
Hit me.
Hippie baby one more time. No, I was going to say, you know, hippie my ass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as they pulled away from the girlfriend's place, 4 cop cars appeared out of nowhere and pulled them over and arrested them.
Arrested them for what?
They just arrested them.
Okay.
So it turns out Stan had gotten busted selling acid recently. Mm-hmm. And to get out of trouble, he flipped on all his clients. So snitch ass, bitch ass.
Snitch ass, bitch ass, Stan ass, man ass.
Yeah, that's what I always say. But the cops obviously didn't find anything on them.
I was going to say, I'm going to have a strong legal issue with this.
Yeah. So, you know, they were basically forced to let them go home.
I love that. Oh, my God. They just spent all their time and they lost a bunch of money on acid. I love it.
I don't even know if it was real acid, though, because apparently they never even they never even felt it.
Oh, also they're idiots for taking it and then we're going to drive 2 hours home.
I mean,
I cannot deal. But OK.
Goons, I swear. But I'm glad it didn't kick in when they were in front of the cops. It would be 21 Jump Street.
I kind of wish it would have, because they still wouldn't have been able to get them in trouble.
Like, prove it.
Yeah.
So they no longer had a dealer. Obviously, Stan was out of the picture.
Darn it.
But at this point, they didn't really need one because, according to Grant, they were known throughout Idaho as basically those hippies who sell pot.
Okay.
And so college kids, young people, whatever, would reach out to them and sell them their weed, and then they would go on and sell to other people.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
They knew that they could just sell it easily because they knew they would want it, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Around that same time, Grant moved in with a friend in an apartment in Twin Falls, Idaho, a city about 20 minutes away from his grandparents' home in Jerome.
Okay.
So he was like, ooh, I'm a big time drug dealer now. I can't live with granddaddy and grandmammy anymore.
My granddaddy and grandmammy. Oh my God. That was the worst on every level.
I'm so sorry.
From both of us. I hated that.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, one day out of the blue, he's at home in his apartment and a former acquaintance named Gail showed up at the door.
Gail the snail.
Gail the Snail. I love that. So Gail the Snail and Grant had played in a band together, and Gail the Snail had always been super straight-laced and dweeby, as his name implies.
Wait, Gail's a man.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's G-A-L-E, like the wind.
A Gail. A snail.
Man. Gail the Snail. So when Gail the Snail asked Grant if he could score him some pot, Grant knew something was up.
Oh, because he popped out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Okay.
So as he tells it, he agreed to go along with Gail the Snail's request. But in reality, he had a plan to fuck with Gail the Snail and the cops he assumed had sent him there.
He was going to assault the snail.
I can't not call him Gail the Snail now, though. This is his name.
Well, okay. So I love this. So he doesn't really know if there's a plan, but he's going to revolt without knowing anything was really going on.
Yeah, because he's like, why the hell else would Gail be here?
Gail's like, I need a fix.
Yeah.
come on. Life of a snail is hard. You're on your feet all day.
That's so true.
Did you get my joke? Because they don't have feet.
Oh, they don't?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I just assumed they didn't.
I don't know why. I thought they had tiny feet under them, little suctiony feet. I don't think that's true. I just, in my head, that's what I thought.
I guess in my head, it was just only little wiggly, a little wiggly body.
Yeah. Let us know.
Let us know.
Because we're not going to Google it.
No.
I might Google it. We'll see.
She's going to Google it so she can be like, I'm right.
Fuck you. All right. So anyway, Grant had Gail the Snail give him cash to order a pound of weed from San Francisco.
Okay.
And he told Gail he'd send the guy in California a MoneyGram. And he specifically mentioned, I'm going to send this from the store where my grandma works.
Why do you do that?
Well, we'll see. So he said he was going to do that. And then the guy would mail the weed the following day.
Oh, he's going to see if someone's showing up there.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. Ooh, the plot thickens.
So in reality, he took the cash. It was I think $125 or something. And he used it to throw a party for 25 of his closest stoner friends.
Hells yeah. Oh my God. I love it.
Yeah. I hope that part of the story is true because it's my favorite.
I'm going to choose to fully believe that part.
Agreed. So his suspicion about Gail being a narc was confirmed when the owner of the store where his grandma worked, where he supposedly sent the MoneyGram from, told him that the cops had shown up and demanded to see their MoneyGram receipts from the day before.
Oh, Gail the Snail, you little snail.
Little frickin' snail.
I'm gonna salt the shit out of you, Gail.
So Grant and his buddy took this as a sign to move out of their Twin Falls apartment and back in with their families.
Okay,
they were like, they're after us.
Or new plan, flee the country.
They could have done that, but they didn't. They're like, let's just move back home.
All right. No one will find them there.
No one will. But first, Gail came by one more time to be like, man, where's the weed? What's up? And they were like, nah. And they roughed him up a little bit.
Roughed him up is the best because you don't really know what it means.
Yeah. Well, I know what it means. I just shortened it to roughed it up.
Oh, okay.
they like pulled a knife on him. It was great.
All right.
And so it was fine. They didn't actually hurt him. And they learned the names of the cops who sent him.
Oh.
Ed and Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll later learn that their names are Ed Heath and Mike McGreer.
Okay.
Grant went back to his grandparents' house in Jerome, where he wouldn't have to worry about these particular cops. Or so he thought.
Yeah, they're following you. Like, they have a vendetta.
They really do. One day, Grant, his best friend Harry, and two other guys went to see a movie at the theater in Twin Falls.
Mm-hmm.
As they drove out of town after the movie, they were forced to stop at a police roadblock.
Oh my God, were they waiting for them to come into Twin Falls with a roadblock?
No, they got lucky because the cop told them there had been some armed robberies and they were looking for the suspects. And then they ran their licenses just to be safe. And they said that Grant looked like one of the suspects and that they'd have to take them all downtown to the station and put them in a lineup.
Lies.
Yeah. So these cops were, you guessed it, Ed Heath and Mike McGreer.
I did guess it. You guys heard me.
Yeah. The guys who sent Narky Nark Gale the Snail.
Narky Nark Gale.
They hadn't been lying about the armed robberies. That was true. But they saw their chance and they took it.
Okay, watch. The next car was the armed robber and like they just fully got away.
Oh my God. I hope that's exactly what happened.
But thank God they got their corner drug dealer.
Yeah, seriously. This guy selling bunk weed out of his apartment.
Jeez, Louise. And I bet those cops had smoked some of it already just from someone else in the town.
Nah, I think these dudes were straight laced. They were like the narcotics officers.
Smoking each other's dicks.
Yeah, probably that too. And just for reference, like pretty much everyone in this situation is in their 20s, I think. It was really hard to get exact like ages, but
okay.
Young cops, young like college dudes.
All right. All rambunctious.
Precisely.
Precisely.
So the cops let the other two dudes go, but Grant and Harry, his best friend, got arrested. The cops couldn't really pin anything on them, but they still threw them in jail. And Harry was like kind of his partner in crime. Like he kind of was his like co-drug dealer, I guess.
Okay, yeah. I'm like, okay, you can keep me for 24 hours, then get out of my fucking face.
Yeah, well, then they interviewed them, and they couldn't really pin anything on them, but they still threw them in jail. And once they were in there, Grant asked Harry, like, bro, we had an ounce of weed in the car. Like, where the hell is it? And Harry was like, oh, all good. I ate it. And he was like, you ate it?
An ounce?
Yeah.
Okay.
Four fingers high on a plastic baggie.
Wowza.
Also, what I haven't yet mentioned is that this was special weed laced with opium that someone had just brought in from out of the country.
Oh, that changes things.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was going to say weed doesn't fuck you up if you eat it just like as a flower, but opium will.
Yeah. Well, he said he swallowed the entire bag. So I guess it probably didn't digest in his stomach. So like maybe it wasn't as intense as it could have been. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, but supposedly he spent the next day and a half in jail drifting in and out of a drug-induced coma, but ended up being fine.
Wow. Okay. Also, what are you holding him on for over 24 hours? You literally have nothing.
Well, they did.
Oh.
Because the cops searched Grant's car and found some bunk weed wrapped in tinfoil, which is like not a thing that people really do. Like you can put it in tinfoil, but that's not normal.
So like they planted it.
100%.
Okay. 100%.
Allegedly, Ed was the one who had like masterminded this and planted it there, which is funny because apparently there were actually roaches in the ashtray.
Oh my God.
And for anyone who doesn't know, roaches are like the smoked down stubs left over after you smoke a joint.
Yeah. Wow. 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 So, I mean, they could have had them on that.
Yeah. They could have busted them, but they instead planted evidence.
How? Oh, God.
So then the guys got sent to county jail. They were quickly bailed out by their families. Grant ended up sanding all the spray paint off his car to make himself like less conspicuous. He didn't want to be a target anymore.
I'd say.
For real. And then something happened. He got a call from a friend who let him know that Ed and Mike, those cops, had been fired from the Twin Falls Police Department and were being charged with planting false evidence.
Whoa, for his case?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So they dropped his charges?
Yes.
Okay.
So Grant and Harry ended up hanging out with a dealer who had a friend at the Twin Falls PD, and he told them that all the cops in the area had their eye on Grant since the incident in Boise. Mm. And cops there talk, you know?
They talk.
Apparently, some of them even believed he was involved in like a large scale LSD ring, which he was not.
I'm like, he literally dropped fake acid one time in front of you guys. Settle down.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Like, you didn't even know who ate it. Someone else could have ate it all.
Yeah. They could have keistered it right up their booty holes.
Precisely. So supposedly, like, everyone in the department was involved in this cover up, allegedly. but these two guys were kind of the scapegoats to cover the apartment's ass. And also, like, Ed was the one who actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just seemed like the whole thing was shady.
Oh, for sure. Wait, so who decided to arrest them if everyone was in on it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, because Grant made such a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't write this down in my notes, but to give you an idea of what happened, like, the weed was found in the air vent. So Ed was searching one side of the car and he was like, oh, I actually want to search that side. And the other guy was like, no, I got it, dude. It's fine. So he searched and they didn't find anything. And then Ed was like, well, did you check in the air vent?
Oh, so he had put it there before they went out to search.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to place it at the time they were doing their search.
No. And like the whole thing, the reason it was extra sketchy was because the car, he had moved it. Like the car was not in the place that he had parked it the night before.
Hmm. That's weird.
Or like 2 days before, whatever it was. So yeah, so that's why he was like, obviously this is a cover up. So I think because he like made a big scene about it in the moment and like people were walking by and like it was too public, I think they had to fire someone.
Oh, good. I wish they would do that when they murder people in the street for no reason.
Or, sure wish they would.
Or even asleep in their beds.
I don't know if like police unions were a thing back then or not, but they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, so Grant has like this whole conspiracy theory that the Mormon church was involved in the situation somehow. Like they didn't approve of drugs and they wanted these guys locked up so they wouldn't sully their perfect Mormon town. And also Grant's dad was a Mormon and like high up in the Mormon church, I guess, in the area. And the dad was like livid about it because it was making him look bad.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So according to the book, 75% of the Twin Falls Police Department was Mormon. I don't know if that's accurate, but that's what he said.
I mean, so it just makes sense that even if it wasn't like a talked about conspiracy that they were planning, it probably just easily fell into place. Like, it was easy to get people to go along with it and shit.
Totally.
Ugh.
Grant decided to peace out of town after finishing the semester at school, and he transferred to Idaho State in Pocatello, which you talked about last episode.
Ooh, he got all haunted and shit.
Yeah. And around that time, the two cops, Ed and Mike, were charged with planting false evidence, but those charges were quickly dropped, and they were allowed to plead guilty to second-degree misdemeanor charges instead.
So they were given promotions and brand new police cars.
Well, I'll tell you about what happened to them in a moment, but first, the aftermath.
Ooh, okay.
Because the cops had fucked up so badly twice, Grant and Harry had a good case against them, and they tried to sue the cops, the county, and the city for over $5 million.
Whoa.
Yeah. But then they learned that you're not allowed to sue them without their permission.
I mean, what?
Right?
Okay.
Totally chill, totally fair. However, that rule was struck down by the Idaho Supreme Court 3 years later, and Grant and Harry were offered settlements for much less than the $5 million they requested. Do you want to guess how much they got?
Each? Did they request $5 million each?
I'm actually not sure.
Okay, well, I'm just going to say from $5 million to $800,000.
So they each got $3,500.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of about $26,000 today.
Oh, so, no.
Not nothing, but nowhere near what they were looking for.
Zoinks. But also, they did not deserve $5 million for that. Sorry.
No, absolutely not.
No freaking way.
It's also funny because like they were guilty, but I mean, not that I think you should be arrested for pot. That's stupid. But
yeah. So did he come out later and say that the roaches were in the thing, or like how did that get found out?
It was in the book.
Oh, OK. So he said it. OK.
Yeah. He was very open about his like indiscretions.
Ooh, he's so naughty.
Ew. So when he got this amount of money, Grant was like, OK, that's fucking bullshit. And he got depressed and he dropped out of school and moved to Mexico for 3 months.
Okay, wow. That's what I was hoping after he got arrested the first time, but fine.
Yeah, he just waited a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, he settled down in Nevada, where he went on to get married and divorced at least 3 times, it seems, from Ancestry.com.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Oh, bummer.
Yeah, I couldn't, like, the reason I went to Ancestry.com is, like, he didn't really talk much about his life after this whole thing, so I was just trying to find some info.
Gotcha.
He had kids. He worked in a casino. Not sure for how long, but he wrote a book about it, and the book has a very disgusting title that I will not say.
He loves writing books.
Yeah. I couldn't find any information about what happened to his friend Harry, but as for the cops...
Ooh, okay.
One of them, Mike, he's not the one that planted the drugs, but he was involved, went on to be really successful in rehabilitating formerly incarcerated people. And he got his PhD in criminal justice.
Oh, OK.
Yeah. So it seems you never know, but it seems like he went on to live actually like a decent life and do decent things.
OK. All right. Better than I was expecting.
Yeah. Ed, on the other hand, ended up getting hired as a narcotics officer at another police department. And then I think I actually didn't write this down, so I hope I'm not wrong, but I believe that at that department, he also got in trouble for something.
Oh my God. Dumb.
He then eventually went on to become the chief of police of Blackfoot, Idaho. And in 1981, he was arrested in Arizona for allegedly dealing in stolen property.
I mean, just like he does all the most boring crimes.
Yeah. They thought he was trying to steal a backhoe. I don't know.
And they're like, give that backhoe.
Amen, Idaho.
Oh my God. Idaho.
They ended up actually just not charging them, though, like him and his partner in crime. And they were like, oh, no, this is like all part of, I don't know. I can't even explain it. It's all bullshit. It's stupid.
I mean, they're cops, so they got off.
Yeah. He was allowed to continue working as the chief of police until he was replaced the following year.
By Gail the Snail.
Probably.
Who had been working to overcome Ed for their whole life.
Gail the Snail. Then Ed went on to be an investigator for the county prosecutor's office. And that was the last I could find about him. That was in 1989.
Oh, shit. So there has been some time in between.
Yeah.
He has had time to fuck things up.
Yeah. But I love how he keeps getting in trouble and just keeps like getting away with it and getting passed on to other departments and like getting better and better jobs.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sure his pay has only gone up.
Yeah. Like, I mean, at this point, he's like in his 80s if he's still alive. So he's probably not working anymore. But
wowza.
Yeah. So that's it. So as you can see, there were no potatoes involved. I just didn't know where that story was going to go. It didn't end up being like the craziest crime, but I just thought it was interesting.
No, we don't normally cover ones like this. So I like it. It's a nice like little change of pace.
Yeah, a little bit of an adventure.
And obviously, ACAB. And yeah, I don't know. It was just that was interesting. I like that.
Thank you.
And I'm so sorry, Grant, that you had to deal with all that shit. And I hope you're thriving.
Me too. But also, you're like a little bit of an asshole. So maybe don't be.
Yeah, a little bit of an asshole. Maybe just like, ooh, I hope every time he gets a haircut, they accidentally shave off a big chunk in the back and he never finds out.
I hope that every time he lights a joint, it just like immediately goes out and he can't figure out why. It's like a trick candle, but it's a trick joint every time.
And then if someone else lights it and hands it to him, like they could be puffing on it. It's great. They hand it to him. It immediately just goes out.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. That's better. Fuck his haircut.
Yeah. Both of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. He can take them both.
Also, he's in his 80s. He probably doesn't have hair.
Wowza. So that was wildly wild. Geesh.
Yeah. Next week, we are going to be back in Idaho, our final Idaho episode, and we'll be telling you about some crazy headlines, that crazy news stories that happened in the state of Idaho.
The wackiest of the wacky.
The weirdest of the weird.
The craziest of the craws.
The most bizarre of them all.
Of the bizarre.
God, okay.
Okay. So yeah, Idaho, wacky headlines. Weird shit happens there.
Don't forget about our stickers. If you want a sticker, go to bit.ly/badtrip01.
Badtrip01, baby.
They are free. We want to give them to you. We would also really appreciate if you would rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen that allows you to rate.
Yes, please rate and review us. It just gives people a chance for us to annoy them as well.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time
on this bad trip.